We have two readings today. The first is an excerpt from an article that appeared in the UU World magazine in late 2002 by the Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt. And the name of the article was Praying Without Apology. She writes, "I'd been a Unitarian Universalist for 8 or 9 years when I moved to Detroit, Michigan. I was participating in a service at the Detroit Church, and in my part of the presentation, I had talked about God. An older woman approached me during coffee hour later that morning to inform me that, as you use, we had given up the notion of God. She demanded to know how I, as an African-American woman, could possibly talk about God when that same reprehensible Christian concept had been used to justify slavery. I was dumbfounded by her vehemence, but not too shocked to remind her that it was the same tradition's God, most particularly a just and loving God whose movement was forever toward justice and freedom and wholeness, that had inspired much of the anti-slavery movement and, indeed, most of the major reform movements of the 19th century that, as Unitarian Universalists, we are so eager to claim. Finally, I informed her that I was just as much a Unitarian Universalist as she was, and I had not given up on the notion of God." And then second, this comes from the Charter of Compassion that was affirmed by a group of leaders from religious traditions across the globe, including Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Confucianism. The principle of compassion lies at the heart of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions, calling us always to treat all others as we wish to be treated ourselves. Compassion impels us to work tirelessly to alleviate the suffering of our fellow creatures, to dethrone ourselves from the center of our world and put another there, and to honor the inviolable sanctity of every single human being, treating everybody without exception with absolute justice, equity, and respect. It is also necessary in both public and private life to refrain consistently and emphatically from inflicting pain, to act or speak violently out of spite, chauvinism, or self-interest, to impoverish, exploit, or deny basic rights to anybody, and to incite hatred by denigrating others, even our enemies, is a denial of our common humanity. We acknowledge that we have failed to live compassionately, and that some have even increased the sum of human misery in the name of religion.
When we plotted out our sermon schedule and topics for the spring, we didn't actually plan it this way at all. But as it happens, what I bring you today might well be considered a part two of Roger's sermon from last weekend. Now, the original topic for his message was Jesus through the lens of process theology. And he found, as he explored how Jesus fits into that theological construct, he was unavoidably drawn into looking at how we as Unitarian Universalists view the religious system or systems that have evolved based on Jesus' life and death. Roger rightly, I believe, pointed to what some see as a significant gap between our UU professed beliefs and our lived faith in this area. And if you missed his message, I would invite you, there are copies on the table across from the coffee area. You can also go online and listen to the MP3, or you can download the message PDF. But it's a very worthwhile message, so I encourage you to pick it up. But what he told us last week was to just stop it. Stop holding on to unfairly limited views of Christianity and dismissing or even dissing the whole of that belief structure on account of the narrowness of some who claim to follow the path of Jesus. He said there's a word for us when we UUs speak disparagingly of Christianity as a whole. And that word, he frankly told us, is hypocrisy. Now, as you might expect, Roger's message generated quite a bit of response last weekend and also in the days since then. And one of the follow-up questions that I've heard from a few different corners goes something like this. Okay, so we're not supposed to be stone throwers. It's unfair to generalize and cast aspersions on all who claim Jesus as their teacher, because many of them are truly fine folks who are sincerely working to bring us a more just world. But, some have asked, what about those gatekeepers that Roger talked about, who make it their life's work to discriminate and exclude all of those who don't believe precisely as they do? How are we supposed to avoid throwing stones at them when they have no compunction whatsoever about hurling boulders at us? So, in my part two, this is the question that opens the door for our conversation today. Let's take a heartfelt look at how our faith walks with integrity, always and everywhere, even when we are facing those who are unkind and closed, even those who exclude us and seem mean-spirited and unjust. As a faith, we have done quite a lot of work and made good progress on being genuinely open and welcoming to others regarding gender and race and class. But it is with the religious and the political other that it seems like we have more work to do, especially those who dismiss or oppose us. Now, that's no easy order, I know. Experience has taught us that it is very difficult, nearly humanly impossible, to respond to unkindness with kindness. It's really challenging to graciously answer meanness with love. And yet, if we believe our core teachings and if we believe our seven principles, then we have no doubt that we are called to honestly respect the dignity and worth of all persons. That is, we respect the kind and justice-oriented folks of the world, and we are equally and perhaps especially called to respectfully value those who are not showing benevolence and are not striving to achieve our interpretation of justice. Our faith claims the dignity and worth of all persons, not just those that we find palatable or cordial or like-minded. And that doesn't mean just giving verbal assent to that concept that everyone has dignity and worth, but it means believing in our heart of hearts that all people do have worthiness and respectability. As we live out our faith, it seems so much easier for us to ache for the oppressed in far-off regions of the globe than it is to bring our appreciation for the honoring of humanity to those nearby us who we perceive as being oppressive and closed-minded. But our faith calls us to treat all with that same degree of justice, equity, compassion, and worthiness, regardless of what they may or may not believe or do. This is foundational to our Unitarian Universalist belief. All are worthy, all are loved equally. Well, that sounds pretty good. We like to fancy ourselves as coming from that high moral ground. But how on earth are we truly supposed to live like that all day, every day, as Confucius urged his followers to do? Well, frankly, I'm not certain. I'm still very much working on it. But I can tell you that I believe down to my toes that it is crucially important work, crucially important for the future of our faith and the future of our world. So let's step back just a moment to get some perspective about this faith of ours. In truth, we are a very small denomination. And to be technically correct, we're not a denomination at all. We are an association of congregations. But by most counts, there are perhaps 300,000 of us worldwide. Maybe more if you count in all those people who believe like us but don't know that name. But when you compare that number, whatever it might be, to the 6.9 billion people on Earth, you can see that only the tiniest fraction of folks see things the way we do. Now, I know, to many of us, it feels like what we teach and preach here is so profoundly rational and sensible that it's hard to imagine that's true. But it is. Now, recognizing how minuscule our numbers are, I would imagine, might inspire within us just a little bit of humility. The overwhelming majority of human beings subscribe to beliefs that are different from ours. That presents quite a problem if we desire to be in relationship with those folks, but we're inhibited from doing that because we overtly or subtly are judging their difference as being unenlightened or of lesser value. I'm not implying that just because we are such a small minority that that indicates that we are somehow incorrect in our creedless and uncorralled faith. Obviously, the fact that I have devoted my life to Unitarian Universalism means that I have thrown my whole lot in with this way of believing. But I'm drawn to wonder, when we become so sure of our own rightness, so intransigent, so stubbornly entangled in arguments to prove our superior reasoning, what is the point of that sort of argument? Are we invested in bludgeoning others with the eloquence of our words, or are we invested in creating instead a more peaceful world? Is there an ego surge from being able to argue down another person and through logic obliterate their faith claims by proving that their Bible or Quran or other holy book is really just an errant misinterpreted document? Shouldn't this faith of ours inspire us instead to be bridge builders between all of those people? I worry sometimes that we Unitarian Universalists are so pleased with what we have found here that our happiness can turn itself into smugness and condescension toward others. We sometimes imply with our tone or our words that we're waiting for the rest of them to conjure up the bravery or the brains to come over to see things our way. Even if we don't ever express thoughts like that, if we feel that in our hearts, it is a violation of our own principles. But when we have a visitor, and we have lots of visitors most every weekend, I wonder how it feels to a person who is perhaps for the very first time exploring these whole new ways of thinking. How do you think she or he might internally react when they perceive that air of righteousness here, as if this faith is somehow superior to all others and that we have somehow arrived spiritually? I know, and I am very grateful, that it is definitely not the predominant way that we are together here. It may even be more rare here than it is in some of our sister congregations, but every once in a while it does come up, the intimation of, aren't we just the coolest group because we have this whole religion thing figured out? As if there is an evolution of faith development and Unitarian Universalists are the culmination of all that both science and spirituality have brought forth. It was a brilliant ending to last week's message when one of our youth, Alex Coakley, raised his hand at the congregational response. He was the last one to speak at the fourth and final service, and I believe this was the first time he's ever shared. He simply and astutely pointed out that the gatekeepers and the guards, those who Roger had described as preaching a closed and exclusive Christianity, that even those gatekeepers hold their beliefs just as sincerely as we do, that we are all of the same humanity, subject to the same judgmentalness, the same selfishness, the same unkindness, the same myopia about our own shortcomings. What is simply true, and I feel this more deeply with every passing day, is that we are all in this business of surviving life together. We all need each other. We must make space for the other in our hearts. That there is no in-crowd or no out-crowd is so crucial and crucially important in our Unitarian Universalist beliefs. But we, as UUs, we are a funny lot, and even many non-UUs know that about us. We are very deservedly the butt of jokes of the likes of Garrison Keillor and Bart Simpson and others. And here's one that I came across on the internet recently, and it kind of typifies what I'm talking about, and so I brought it to share with you today. This is a parody of the welcoming words at some fictitious UU congregation. As we welcome our newest members and visitors, it's only fair to let them know what we Unitarian Universalists are like and what we expect. We are friendly. If you are not friendly, out you go. We are always sincere, even if we're faking it. We aren't quite sure how ambivalent we should be. We believe in tolerance, and we cannot stand intolerant people. We are optimists. Anyone who doesn't look on the bright side depresses us. We are more non-competitive than any other group. We believe in equality. Everyone is as good as the next person, and we're just a little bit better. We have our critics, but those are just closed-minded people. Dogmatism is absolutely forbidden, and freedom of belief is rigidly enforced. And to this warm and wonderful place, we joyfully welcome you. Funny, but a bit uncomfortably close to the heart of the matter. Now, I want to lift up two things about what I said about responding to unkindness with love. I am not saying that we should silence ourselves in the face of injustice, religious or otherwise. You know that's not what I mean. I am not saying that we should fail to speak the truth of our own personal spiritual journey. But I am saying, however, that we can do that without bashing where we came from, without elevating our own position to seem as if we think that we have a corner on the right way of seeing things. A big part of what we object to in fundamentalist representations of all kinds is that they claim to know the mind of God and that they place that mind in a very small box. But when we demonize and close our hearts to those people, we are just doing another version of the very same thing. So I am not saying to muzzle our own authentic voice in any way, but I am saying that sharing of our truth can be motivated by a higher purpose than feeding our egos or affirming our rightness. Instead, it can spring from an open and genuinely caring heart that is seeking peace and wholeness for all of humanity. In fact, I believe, for it to have its greatest effect, that's precisely where it needs to emerge from. And the second thing that I wish to acknowledge here is that Roger and I are quite sympathetically aware that some have entered these doors carrying still open wounds that have been inflicted upon them under the guise of religion. And it's perfectly sensible that some of the healing process involves naming the wrongness and the perpetrators. But I think that we also have to be mindful not to get stuck in that place where all the goodness that we have found here is defined only by all the bad that we have rejected from our past. Roger touched on this last weekend, but it's a point that is well worth mentioning again. Now, I don't know if this might seem like an apt analogy to you, but hang in with me for a minute because it feels relevant and perhaps it's a way to understand this. In my long and somewhat complicated life, I have had a couple of very significant relationships prior to Rosie, before she and I found each other. Now, she is clearly and totally my one in this world, and we've been together nearly a dozen years now. When I'm expressing to people about why she is so important to me, I don't think she would be complimented at all if I always did that in terms of degrading my past partners. I just don't think that would make her feel known or seen or appreciated or loved. Instead, she would want to hear the particulars of why it is that I am in love with her now, what specific joys and beauty she brings to my life today. Similarly, I think that one of the things that we Unitarian Universalists must do is to keep our faith vibrant and growing in this world, we have to find language about how this faith nurtures our soul, how it supports and encourages us to walk through life with love and integrity and gratitude. a message that is relentlessly built on all that we've rejected, is truly quite uninspiring. But a message that offers hope and connectedness to a larger purpose, that is attractive and oh so needed in this troubled world of ours. So we need to make respectful space for the religious other in our hearts because it is consistent with our Unitarian Universalist principles. It rightly portrays the most foundational beliefs of being honestly open, accepting, welcoming of all diversity. It is a path to help our faith live on into future decades, and even more importantly, it is a way for us to help our very complex and difficult world survive into that same future as well. I recently read a wonderful book called The 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. It's written by the religious historian Karen Armstrong. Now, much of the book is aimed at this same conversation, not within Unitarian Universalism, but throughout all of our pluralistic world. It was with a knowing nod that she named this book The 12 Steps, because she feels that we all need to let go of our addiction to our egotism. We humans function sometimes as if we are compelled to dominate others with our own rightness, as if our survival depends on us convincing others to think as we do and to come to the same conclusions that we have. Armstrong begins making her case for choosing a path of compassion over a path of egotistic rightness addiction by talking about how humans have evolved over the millions of years, and she talks about our brain, that it, like other organs of our bodies, has evolved in ways that helps support our continued existence. The early brain, the reptilian brain, she notes, was entirely consumed by the four Fs: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproducing. This is what our brains knew that we needed to do to ensure that our lives could go on. But as we as a species have progressed through evolution stages, our brains grew too. The portions of our brains that are devoted to softer things, communal things like empathy and compassion. We no longer have to be steered by the four Fs of our old brain. We have learned that there are better ways to deal with conflict, things that go beyond fighting and fleeing. And those ways involve us putting ourselves into the shoes of another, seeing life through the eyes of another, truly having respect for the simple humanity of others, and engaging in sincere dialogue so that we can know and understand their needs too. And we might say that all of this boils down to the ability to want for others the same things that we want for ourselves. Now, this, of course, is the golden rule, which can be found in variations of language throughout all revered spiritual teachings. Christian, humanist, Hindu, Taoist, Buddhist, all of them have this ethical construct. It's offered at the core of their hallowed commandments that we should treat others as we wish to be treated. Very significantly, none of these spiritual paths talk about treating others as we have been treated. Mistreatment by others does not in any way negate or void the golden rule. We know this. We look at those that we consider to be great examples, powerful people who truly have changed or are changing history's course. Martin Luther King Jr., Aung San Suu Kyi, the Dalai Lama, Mandela, so many others. None of them resorted to lashing back. All resisted the power of their oppressors through the unflinching use of love. One of the many priceless and timeless quotes of MLK Jr. says that we must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method, he says, is love. Now, those great people did not practice revenge or reciprocation. Gandhi famously said that if we all succumbed to the eye for an eye tactic, the only thing that would accomplish would be to leave the whole world blind. What each of them did do was practice a kind of compassionate assertiveness. No one had any doubt where they stood on issues of justice. No one ever questioned their commitment or their willingness to do whatever it takes to walk steadily toward the goal of fairness and freedom for all. But they did it with constantly loving hearts, and each one of them, King, Gandhi, Jesus, Thich Nhat Hanh, all of them, joined the ranks of so many others who effectively used the weapon of love and compassion to combat hate. That's the only true way there is. It's the only lasting way. We know that only love has the power to cast out hate. And practicing love takes discipline. It takes devoted effort. It is truly a spiritual practice. Toward the end of her book, Karen Armstrong says that the attempt to become a compassionate human being is a lifelong project. It is not achieved in an hour or a day or even in 12 steps. It is a struggle that will last until our dying hour. So over and over and over, we must choose to turn away from judgment and toward empathy and understanding, even as we speak our own compassionately assertive truth. May we always do so without bringing harm to others. May we live our faith not to prove our rightness, but so that we too can become a force for good in our world. May it be so. Amen.